I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered. My life is my own.
Okay, a little bit too
repetitive
there. Welcome to
no
another
surprise,
episode.
I'm having some issues getting the bridged link over here.
All right,
working properly.
Cool.
We were wondering if we could the three way.
We can give it a go. I just want to say welcome to another episode.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure entirely.
Oh, Hacker Voice Radio. I think this is episode 20.
What?
On the 5th of September 2005. Although we're looking at episode 19 either being heavily edited or lost altogether because there were some issues right there and things that happened. I don't know how soon I'll be airing that stuff.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
That's a shame. It's hard to do that sort of thing.
I'll probably end up having to edit it or something like that. But yeah. Anyway, what were you saying about the three-way?
Oh well, the problem is the way that it's bridged. The ATA that I'm using doesn't give enough voltage to run
right
simultaneously.
Okay.
Like a normal phone.
Yeah.
And so he can pick up and hear faintly what's going on, but he also can't speak to us.
Ah.
Which is distinctly defeats the purpose.
Yes. So would you like me to send... Would you like to send me the number to call?
What's that?
Said, would you like to send me the number to call? Or?
Yes, he's posting it on the IRC right now.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. Let me just get back to my show notes.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Actually, what I'm going to do, I'm going to scrap this fucking shit altogether and go back to Firefox. So it's plus one.
And the rest of it.
Yeah, and the rest of it, which I won't read out on air, because I don't think you'd like to. Okay, what I'm going to do is hope and pray that it doesn't go all flop-sided. So, what's his nick again?
This is Neo Interest.
Neo Interest. Cool. Okay. Give me a second, yeah?
Yeah, sure.
Excellent. Here we go. Hopefully, Mr. Skypey won't give me no headache.
Hello.
Hello, this is Belial. I take it you are Neo Interest?
Yes, sir, I am.
Excellent. Now, would you excuse me for 1 second while I try and bridge these two calls together?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Hello.
Hello.
We currently have a freeway, baby.
Very good.
That was me just bumping into a table.
Oh, so your table makes a funny beep sound when you bump into it.
It does, it does. I put a touch tone pad across the entire thing.
Okay.
And now anytime anybody
touches
anything on it or beeps,
okay,
it beeps like crazy.
I've got a few topics that I wanted to bring out in tonight's show.
Certainly.
Which are, when you buy something, is it yours? Or are you just buying it for the privilege of having something? There's two things that have come up in the news.
Don't let me stop.
Sorry. Engadget are reporting that consumers should be expected to be punished for tinkering with their Blu-ray players. as many have done with current DVD players, for instance, to remove regional coding, new internet-connected and secure players will port any hack, and device can be disabled remotely. This article asks, are they talking about PvP-OPM techniques? Now, I've got fuck all idea what that is, but here we go. And it rejects HDMI keys or something else far more sinister, because apparently a hack player is any player that is doing something it's not supposed to do. Now, is this not the fundamental kind of right of you purchase it and it is yours? It is yours to fuck about with. You have that right. But now, obviously, you don't, because you've paid for this, but you're paying for the privilege of being able to use this product. So much like a weird kind of renting.
Yeah, come to yourself? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, okay. I think that, I mean, fundamentally, if you buy something, it's my opinion that you should be able to do whatever you want with it, so long as it doesn't harm another individual.
Sure.
You know, from modifying any pieces. I mean, this is how computers were originally built.
Mm.
You know, and refined. I mean, just look at the story of Apple Computer and how many, you know, basically Altairs they took apart to figure out how to work and read through the manuals and then made them do something better.
Mm.
As far as companies go, they certainly don't want you to do this, because you're not then locked into their proprietary system of doing things, the way of doing things.
Yeah, it's a case of them being afraid of losing out on money, and also you finding out how the technology works and then maybe profiting from that.
Yeah, I mean, that is the problem, but on the other hand, more development and better products is always made under open source.
Yeah.
Beyond which you actually own every piece of that equipment. If you want to break it down into resistors, chips, and boards, that's your right. You purchased it, you know?
Sure.
Not only that, you purchased it at a greater cost than it costs to manufacture it. So I don't honestly see what the hell they should care.
Definitely, yeah. Now,
modifying things. Go ahead.
Sorry, that kind of brings me on to my next point, is they've created a box wrap patent license. Now, the label on the box says single use only and is given the force of law. And if you refill, this is about ink cartridges, if you refill the cartridge, you are liable for patent infringement. So basically what it says is you've got your cartridge there.
Mm-hmm.
If you attempt to refill it, you can be fined or God knows what else for doing so. This is for... Lamax printers, I think it is.
Yeah. My biggest problem with this is that it's forcing you into a sort of disposable system.
Yeah.
As far as technology goes. And if we've learned anything from technology, is that you don't need to dispose of it. It can be recycled in 1,000 different interesting ways.
Definitely, yeah.
It's just another way to lock in more profit. Mm. And that's all they're attempting to do.
Yeah, if we've got to push away from that kind of thing, or at least fight back in some way for these core politicals to gain more sharehold into our pockets, it's not good.
No, it's not good at all. But unfortunately, the current laws support them.
Yeah, they do. And it's funny it's funny how when something like this happens, when it's a piracy case, it's usually dealt with police getting involved, whereas it's a civil matter, because you're not doing any harm to anyone else. You're doing harm to a corporation. I don't see why it would be... I mean, if you involve the police, that means somebody else is paying for that service to that corporation, because every taxpayer pays for the police. Do you see what I mean? So it's doing damage to the whole community. Exactly, but they're not protecting your next door neighbor. They're not protecting the guy on the street. They're protecting the corporation.
Well, I find that this is actually a fundamental flaw as it stands now. As soon as we started allowing corporations, once they were treated as individuals, you're giving human life to a non-human entity.
Yeah.
Which opened up a whole slew of problems.
Mm.
I mean, even if you look at liability structures, a corporation can have plenty of infrastructure, but if they don't keep very much money in, then there's no way to really affect the people that made the choices. You know, the corporation goes bankrupt, it sells off whatever it needs to. The individuals, the people that are actually working in the corporation to do illegal acts are hardly ever held liable.
Yeah.
Unless it's been criminal.
Sure. Well, even then, the corporations can get away with criminal acts of, you know, close even to murder.
Yeah. Mm. It's all the money.
Yeah.
All the money.
Now, the Associated Press is running an article about increasing costs for government secrecy. The information stems from a report posted by OpenTheGovernment.org from the article, "The government is withholding more information than ever from public and expanding the ways of shrouding data." Last year, federal agencies spent a record $148 creating a new strong new secrets for each $1 spent declassifying old secrets. So basically, they spend more money on classifying things than declassifying things in a coalition of watchdog groups reported that Saturday that it's a 28 jump from 2003 when $120 was spent to keep secrets for every $1 spent to reveal them. I'm not too surprised at this because the more information they spread is going to jeopardize them, but I don't really see them. They're not going to be giving away too much shit anyway, you know.
No, it takes like 60, 70 years before the juicy bits even become remotely unclassifiable.
Mm.
And then even then, when they do decide to declassify information, the majority of it's still blanked out. They're still going through intense, you know, ways to just block everything that they can find even remotely rejectionable.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just basically black out pages,
you know,
or lines of documents, anything that's still considered to be taboo.
Yeah, remotely. I mean, even the classified stuff, unclassified stuff is still covered with black lines and hidden and everything like that. But it was funny, I was looking actually at a PDF, that they revealed as unclassified, but it still had the black lines. And basically what you could do is select all on the PDF and copy the text over into TextPad or something like that, and you could still get everything that was classified because they forgot that you could still do that with PDFs. So I guess their security isn't as tight as they want it to be.
Yeah,
based on the layers.
All of the IP addresses for the NASA computers for that Department of Justice case. Oh, that was brilliant. Somebody was very security-minded and very untechnologically savvy.
Yeah.
They're like, I can't see it. It can't be seen.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing was that that tech TV girl, Kat, she did something similar, although she didn't drop IP addresses. She dropped nude pictures of herself onto the tech TV website.
Damn.
They were cropped with Photoshop. Mm. Downloaded the image, there was a way to get into the header, was a thumbnail of the full image saved. So, like, there'd be this image of just, like, part of her face highlighting her eyes, you know, kind of like rectangular bar style.
Yeah.
And then you'd, like, go into the thumbnail of the file, and it'd be her sitting topless in a chair, like, looking off into the distance.
Mm.
Quite funny.
I believe it actually had to do with the vector file. There was a vector mask that they put over the rest of the image so that you couldn't see it.
Yeah, that's what it was.
So how's the fair going?
Oh, the fair was great.
Yeah.
It was very amusing. They had samples of the Roadrunner service and the digital phone everywhere, openly accessible to the public.
Yeah.
There was very little security at the time around the booth. As a matter of fact, I don't think I saw any of the people look at us at all while we were there playing with the computers.
There was a long, bald-haired, balding, sort of gray-haired, kind of blackish-looking guy who got a smile on his face while we were talking back and forth as he was on a terminal next to me, as we were, like, getting the IPs of the computers that were there.
Yeah.
And Mark actually got into cable configuration, or, oh, my God, I just dropped the stock. New interest here. Actually got into the cable testing for it, and got like line strength and frequency and things along those lines.
Signal strength and access to like to reset the configuration and just to restart the modem entirely.
Sounds hardcore.
Based off the web terminal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. Also, I was able to go to style.net and use their Java embedded chat browser there to log on to the IRC channel and then change my nick to what it should be instead of guest.
Cool.
that was definitely fun.
So
the terminals themselves were actually pretty secure.
So where is this happening?
What is that?
Where is this all happening?
You're cutting out.
It's kind of choppy.
I was saying, where is all this happening in the U.S.?
Oh, it's in the New York State Fair right now.
Right, okay.
In Syracuse, New York.
Cool.
About a 10-minute drive from where I'm staying right now during my vacation before I head to the mid.
Excellent.
It was fun. It was very fun. I got some interesting specs on the voice over IP.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. It was a payphone with no international calling plan. Now, when I found the ANI II, the identifying whatever, it came up as 00,
right,
which is termed as a POTS line, plain old telephone system. So what they ended up doing is setting up a POTS end termination on a switch in Oswego, New York, and just did not give that POTS termination a international calling plan.
Okay.
Otherwise, I would have called from there. But if anybody's listening and would like to call up, if nobody's on the payphone, it'll ring through and you can talk to somebody at the New York State Fair. The phone number is 315-216-6135.
Cool. And would you like to drop the docs on our little announcement calling
thing?
Oh,
yeah, sure. I thought you'd do that.
I was going to do last episode, but as I said, I don't know if it's going to air or not, so that's the reason
okay.
why.
That's fine. I'll announce it now. I set up a little automated announcement circuit. It's going to change each week, and it's going to be a rather lengthy telephone call just for some of the you that might want to call up on your regular line that has terrible long-distance calling rates. As a sort of side note before I announce it, you can go to Free World Dial-Up and get their client, and as a trial period, it gives you some calls to U.S. Toll-free numbers. You have to hit star and then the first three digits of the number. Like, for instance, I'm going to drop it now. Our circuit is on the B-Vocal system at 8733-VOCAL.
Sorry, that was 877, yeah.
33VOCAL.
So that's 6225.
Yes.
Cool.
Or 8 6 2 5.
So if you're in the UK and you want to call that, it will be 001-877-338-6225.
And at which point it's going to prompt you for a pin.
It is.
The pin is 1... As it should be.
1337, yeah.
Yes, and the user ID is the same as the final, what is it, 7 digits of the telephone number for the show.
That's
it's
right.
2882554.
Yeah.
And that will drop you right into the announcement circuit.
Mm.
The announcement circuit has a little greeting from a cyber mistress I created. It has a zero-day advisory.
Mm.
As well as quotable quotes based on technology and also the ineptness of humans.
Yeah.
Very amusing, am I, Dad?
Fairly amusing, yes. And there's a shout-out from my cyber mistress to all those listeners out there.
Yeah, it did kind of get me a little bit hot.
There's nothing like a computerized woman.
Telling
naughty,
you.
Naughty thing.
But what was I going to say? Yeah, it was good to... You got a little announcement for me as well.
Oh, yeah. I threw that in. Well, I was reading through... I was showing my friend here today.
Yeah.
The actual thing. I dialed it up on speakerphone. I'm listening to it. I'm like, wait a minute. I completely left...
Yeah, I didn't even notice that you didn't. It didn't mention me. I was like, "Oh, that's pretty funny."
I put it in there. It took me a little while to figure out exactly what to say about you, but I got it done. I got it done. It would have said something else, but I couldn't figure out how to spell tongue at the time, and I was kind of pressed for time. But I think all in all, it went pretty well.
Cool.
The zero-day advisory, though, very, very serious. Watch out for that.
Yeah.
Oh, I went yesterday to the fair, and I got cut off in between seeing my fiancé by a parade. Drummers and tractors, fire departments.
Yeah.
And all I could think to myself is I didn't come 1,300 miles damn parade. Which was fairly funny, but as we were trying to dart across through the parade to get to the other side, they had Tux.
Right.
Tux was marching.
Cool.
Yeah. For no apparent reason. It was just a giant penguin marching down the street by himself.
Just by himself.
I do believe that actually has something to do with the new penguin display they have at the local zoo this year, actually.
Oh, right.
But it's still amusing, nonetheless.
Oh. Is that what it is? See, I just thought it was Tux.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah, I didn't point it out. Oh, it's a penguin either way. Still cool.
Of course, I had to blurt out, Linux rocks! So that was a lot of fun. I found out that pretty much every payphone on the at the New York State Fair does not accept incoming calling.
Oh, right, okay. I wonder
why. Which is unfortunate. I don't know. Probably because of people like me.
Yes.
But, all in all, the State Fair was a good time.
Mm.
For people going to large gatherings like this, usually there's going to be two kind of things you're going to want to look for. One is the telephone system, because that becomes very interesting, because many of these vendor booths and things along those lines have telephone lines set up for a very limited amount of time.
Mm.
And if you can find the exchange that they're on, then you have countless hours of calling very interesting things that sell very, very interesting stuff.
Cool.
And usually quite interesting. Like, how often do you call a number and have a carny answer?
I don't know. Is this a joke? How often do you?
No, it's not a joke. You know, I don't get to talk to carnies very often.
Okay.
They tend to be quite interesting people.
Cool.
So the other thing you want to look for is internet.
Yeah.
Internet is bound to be at these places simply because of the nature of them. If you have like a booth that is, you know, having to hook things up to their network because they're selling things, internet. If you have a company like Time Warner here who can pretty much supply their own internet, they're of course going to have internet, particularly if they have voice over IP
payphones. And wireless internet, possibly?
What's that?
Will it provide, will you have found any wireless access points at all?
I did not actually get to scan with Wi-Fi, as I don't have any with me.
Okay.
Aside from that game adapter, which won't really do me any good, because the only thing I can tell from its display is what channel the Wi-Fi is on.
Sure.
So I didn't go much into that. For the few of you out there, there is of the computer that I was using to access the internet, which was one of their internet kiosks,
yeah,
was 72.43.18.81. I'm not advocating any abuse of this,
yeah,
or trying to denial service of it. I'm not advocating doing anything of it with it whatsoever.
Just ping
except
it.
For the fact that I just wanted to state what it was.
Okay, cool. Could you just ping it?
You could do, theoretically, whatever you'd like to do.
Yeah.
I'm not advocating doing so.
Okay.
So, however, yes, you can ping it.
Does it have a remote control set up there, or is it just LAN only?
Well, from what I could gather, it was all of them hooked into routers, which were then hooked into the infrastructure that were there. But NeoInterest here could probably give you a better description of what was most likely going on, as he has in-depth cable knowledge.
Cool.
Yeah, actually, I'm a technician for the local cable company here.
Cool.
And I do lots of installations as far as Roadrunner and the telephone service. Most likely, I would say they had a router set up there with probably 6 or 8 computers set up, all plugged into the little LAN they had. Ionix was saying there, we had most of the boxes locked down pretty well. They couldn't browse any of the network, local networks, any of the computers or anything like that on the subnets. But I do believe they were all interconnected, and it was very easy to pull up the stats as far as the MAC addresses of the modems.
Sure.
And other such information. We got pictures of all of that. I believe Ionix emailed them to you.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Some of them as well. I've got more coming after the show.
Excellent. Okay.
And
yeah,
that was pretty much it as far as the computer end of it goes. There are other vendors on there that have internet access. There was, last year we explored the Department of Taxation and Finance has a computer there that you can search to see if people owe you back monies or if you have particular refunds from certain government groups.
Right.
And their terminal is rather insecure.
Insecure is not secured at all. Basically what they were doing was running their website off of a CD-ROM.
Okay.
So as soon as you clicked on, like, your Internet Explorer bar to the C drive, it gave you the C drive.
Right.
If you minimized the tab and went on to Explorer, it did have Internet access. They just felt it would be easier to run it off a CD-ROM for some reason.
Okay.
After fooling around with that one for a while, I decided that I'd spent way too much time doing doing certain things in one very specific place, so I decided to cheese it. But I just, like, check my email and did a couple other interesting things.
Cool.
It's just odd that the actual cable locked on the box is so tightly. Like, I couldn't access any of the drives.
Mm.
You know, the mouse was built into the keyboard. You hit Control-Alt-Delete, and all it would let you do is log out.
Yeah.
I didn't really, like, feel like leaving, so I decided not to do that. I'm quite sure their passwords were up to spec.
Yeah.
And then the Department of Finance and Taxation goes ahead and decides they're not going to do anything. Also, the Department of Insurance Regulation also left a computer terminal. Uh-huh. And when I used that one, the guy was actually on his lunch break, so I was completely unsupervised.
Excellent. But you don't want to go
into
that.
As Time Warner goes, I find that their password method is pretty secure. They usually have some sort of a four character combination followed by four digits followed by another four characters that are randomly generated, usually partially words or mixed words. So it's something that would take a very long time to brute force.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and getting a hold of their SAM hashes or password files to try and run brute force on them, pretty much impossible. I mean, if you can do it, then God bless you.
I was actually Hamleys a few weeks ago, where I took that picture of myself with the Vader mask.
Is there something on your end, pulse dialing?
There shouldn't be, unless I'm getting owned.
No. It's got to be something odd. Okay, never. It's done now, anyway. I just heard a lot of pulse dialing, and
okay.
Was wondering why.
Cool. I was in Hamleys a few weeks ago, and they had a nice little terminal there that was a touchscreen.
Okay.
So I instinctively loaded up, bypassed all their shit, and loaded up a on-screen keyboard so I could, you know, manipulate what was going on.
That was one of the things, the one area of security that they did take at those two kiosks that I went to is they didn't give you a mouse. But you simply pull up the accessibility options.
Yeah.
Click on the on-screen, you know, whichever, and it just... Or no, they didn't give you a keyboard, that's it. I pulled up the on-screen keyboard, and then it was done.
Yeah. Anyway, so I saw that their whole system completely fucking unsecure. I was logged in as administrator straight away.
I hate seeing that. I mean, on one hand, it's thrilling, and on the other hand, you just gotta like sort of shake your head.
No. I know. I was not thinking of some major ownage, so I thought, okay, let's just be nice and kind to them. So I downloaded Firefox for them.
Very nice. That's important.
I then loaded up a text file and wrote out with that on-screen keyboard, which is a bitch to write with. Basically,
yeah, they are not.
A little document to say, please secure your shit, otherwise somebody who doesn't have...
Who's not quite as altruistic as I am.
Yeah. Would come along and, you know, do some more damage. And, by the way, I've secured your system for free. I didn't leave any contact details. I've left enough fingerprints for them to fucking dust. And I left.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And I did it all wearing a Vader mask, which I thought was pretty leet.
That is definitely fun.
Yes.
Definitely fun. What you should have done is told them that you secured their network server, pulled up the payroll files on the head of their IT department.
Yeah. and then fired them all.
Just be like, you pay this guy this much to secure your systems. Here I am, fixing things. I'll be sending...
Yeah.
Or this is your bill, itemize it, and then tell them to send it to something like, I don't know, the BT Tower, some executive's office.
Yeah.
That's always fun. Random ownage is the best kind of ownage.
I just thought I had this Vader mask on, and I thought, I feel really evil, and I've got complete fucking access to this machine and their whole network at the same time. Because it had like a 192.168. Yeah, it was a little bit of a moment. But I thought, no, I'm going to be cool and I'm going to be true to my word. So I thought I might just help them out a little bit and write up a little document file and... yeah, it was good.
Welcome to Verizon. We've just owned your system. Oh, lots of fun. So what's new in the UK?
Not much at the moment. We're just we've just been getting some good weather so far, but it's kind of getting a little bit drowsy, a little bit dribbly with the rain and stuff. So, but we're more concerned about what's going on in America with Louisiana and everything. And I was surprised to hear today that George Bush has announced, he's announced that he requires help from outside countries and the UN. That strikes me as being a little bit, I don't know. Strikes me
a turning point in his administration.
Yeah.
Never heard him ask for crap.
Exactly. And now that this major thing's happened.
Could it be because our military and our emergency infrastructure is so thinly spread across the entire world?
Yes.
Perhaps?
It could be. It could be one of the issues, yeah. Or it could be the fact that I have a feeling that he would just want to get all those people in one place and just leave them there and kind of kill them off, because it would benefit his cause.
He's like, I know. We're not going to send any American troops, or at least not too many, into New Orleans, because we don't really want it publicized that we're shooting American citizens. Let's get some other countries to do it. Maybe we can start wars with them afterwards.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, do they have any oil? Yeah, send them in.
Here in New York, the oil supply hasn't run out, because we have some very, very major refineries.
Cool.
Prices are insane.
Yeah.
There's been no respite. It's become even worse. There's no oil refineries in Florida whatsoever. So you used to rely on the oil refineries in the Gulf. Not operating anymore. Oil. If you are in the state of Florida, that time to get gas is between 8 and 9 p.m.
Yeah.
Because that's when they first by morning it's usually gone.
Okay. But, I have to say that I think this is going to fuel so many conspiracy stories.
Weather machines. They've got weather machines.
I was just, because I like to listen to, the Winamp Shoutcast TV stuff. And there's a few good conspiracy channels on there. And they were saying how the U.S. government have these, they have the capability of creating freak weather storms and stuff like that. And I thought, you never know.
We don't know. But I have to say, if we did, it'd be much easier to bury Iraq in a sandstorm.
Yeah.
Than it would, to ever do any of the things that we've been doing. That sounds a little bit far-fetched.
But that would be a tragedy, because I think it would be worse off them saying we've lost all these guys there, all the troops, than lost, 6,000 black people or something like that. That's how I feel, honestly.
Well, I don't know. It depends on if you look at it in a humanistic sort of way or in a governmental sort of way.
No, that's what I'm saying. In their governmental ideology, they'd be better off losing 6,000, people there in Louisiana than the troops. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, any day. Any day of the week. That's terrible. It's not only we lost them, now we're shooting them, too.
Yeah, I want to see people rise up and overthrow this shit, because, this guy's been in power too long.
Well, I've heard that there is a march on Washington scheduled for September the 13th to protest the way that this has been handled by the federal government.
Will the government allow this, or will they just bombard them with their supersonic pain-inducing noise thingies?
That was a hell of an article, right?
Yeah.
They'll allow it. We have the freedom to protest. There will be people arrested at the protest, some of which for no reason whatsoever. But it depends. All in all, I have to say the sad part is unlike the protests of the past and the civil rights movement and for Vietnam and things, the protests now, it's not that the protests themselves are watered down, but their effect certainly is.
Yeah, definitely. I was there at the anti-war protest in London. Now, I don't know how many people went there, but there were literally millions and millions of people. It was very peaceful. It was very kind of subdued. No rioting. I usually tend to go on the May Day protests, and I remember there was a picture in a newspaper with me behind somebody smashing in a McDonald's window, and I was going, yeah! So I thought it was quite funny of me being broadcast all over the newspapers and everything.
Oh, yeah, I love to show up in the news. That's my favorite. No, not really, actually. I have a theory about that sort of thing. If you take the protests that go on, particularly in the United States, some of them recently have been very, very large, despite what news coverage will tell you. There's a sort of sub-faction within American politics, I guess, that are anarchists, as I'm sure there are everywhere. The anarchists in the United States tend to go to these things to fuck with the police and to throw things into other things and basically to break things and wreak havoc, which gives the police every right to start cracking down on those people and anyone even remotely near them.
Sure.
I have a bit of a conspiracy theory. I think some of these people are actually paid to cause trouble, to discredit protests.
Possibly, yes. That is a possibility, but also, you know, when you look at the whole picture, what's happening there? Why isn't something being done about this, and why aren't people rising up? Now, my idea to this is because the government tell you from day to day that it's out of your hands. There's nothing you can really do. You have to leave it to us. You know, just you know, shut up and sit there.
It's also become a sort of blame the next guy down the line.
Yeah.
Like, if you notice, the Bush administration has publicly denounced, you know, the handling of it by the Federal Emergency Administration, that it's been handled horribly, you know, which automatically absolves, like, the highest levels of government from any responsibility, because they're like, oh, this is terrible, this is a travesty, even though their policies directly influence the reaction, even just budget-wise, you know. There wasn't a budget for this. The Federal Emergency Administration, after they tapped their budget, had to go, and they got something along the lines of $10 billion from Congress to be able to actually go in and, you know, try and rescue people and things along those lines. It's really a failure of government. The reason why people don't, you know, stand up and really do something about it is that the general level of apathy and complacency in this country is enormous.
I just think it's crazy. I think it's complete and utter madness that this is happening to
America. I think so, too. This could happen anywhere else and not be a big, you know, and if it happened, the people would definitely make the government responsible.
Sure.
Accountable.
Look at a tsunami that happened in Asia. That was major, major chaos, and loads of people lost their lives, but everybody put together an amount and send it off, and food, and to help these starving people. The only reason is because the government just simply was not able to cope with this kind of incident. Looking at America, they're able to fucking send thousands and thousands of troops to Iraq. Hundreds of thousands of troops to Iraq, invade a whole country, turn over a whole government, and then start talking shit about other countries.
Well maintaining all military bases across the world.
Yes. And and they can't even sort out their own shit. What's happening here? There's something wrong, and I think it's George Bush.
I think that a large part of that is true. It's also the American public. I mean, we can hold the government responsible as much as we want, but in the end, the American public has chosen that government. And so long as people are still being fed...
You could argue they really didn't, but...
Well, yeah, with the Bush administration, at least.
Yeah.
So long as people are still being fed and still going about their normal lives where they have power, they have transportation, they have the amenities that they're used to, then they're not really going to raise a stink about anything.
Yeah.
You know, you think that having the gas prices double years would raise some red flags and really, you know, cause something major, but no. No. You think going to war under false pretenses and commit... Many Americans have died in that, let alone how many Iraqis we've killed.
Sure.
You know, but no, that was necessary.
No,
They said they needed it to do...
Yeah,
they're getting it done.
You know, they had weapons of mass destruction that they were available to deploy in under 46 seconds or something like that, 46 minutes. Where are they now? We can't find them. They'll be there, but, you know, they'll be sure to be found soon. Oh, no, we can't find them. They must have hidden them. Oh, no, they don't have them.
Oh, they weren't there.
Yeah,
never about that.
You know, at the beginning,
we were liberating the Iraqi people.
Yeah, exactly.
Please
at the beginning,
disregard all communication to the contrary.
It was 100% an illegal war. You can't say any other way. And now they're saying it wasn't a war; it was a liberation. My balls. You know, when you look at the whole picture at the beginning, you know, you could just view it back in a timeline of what's happening here, and you say from the beginning it was weapons of mass destruction. They can launch any minute, this and that. We know where they are. We found them. We're 100% sure of it. And then, you know, we have good solid intelligence. Now that's a joke right there. That intelligence part.
Well, one of the major problems was the way that we were all socialized under the Cold War.
Yeah.
When I was going to school, at least, it was very, very implicit. The Soviet Union, they were bad.
Mm.
Very bad. They were evil. America was good.
Yeah.
And in this entire struggle, good will triumph over evil, and never doubt the goodness of America in this struggle. Communism, very, very bad. And now, in a post-communist era, we don't have a single-handed focus on an enemy that we can definitely say is evil.
Yeah, I mean, you do find that the Americans always need an enemy. You know, it was the Native Americans there, Indians, and then it would be this and that. Now, you know, it was Canada, and then it'll be...
I think it began with the World War I and World War II.
Sure.
At least as America's as Americans as liberators.
Yes.
You know, which now has been perverted into an excuse to do just about anything.
Yes.
You can look throughout American history and find points where we had distinct. But I think really this whole good versus evil thing started in World War I. And then the Nazis just solidified it incredibly.
Mm.
And then because of our own poor foreign policy decisions, directly in between 1945 and 1950, which was when it sparked, since then we've had a very, very single purpose, democracy over communism.
Yeah.
And then communism falls. And we had democracy. And we had peace. We actually had some economic prosperity.
Definitely, yeah.
And now we have a new enemy. Terrorism.
Yeah.
I find it's an intrinsic flaw in American thought. Mm. The thought that we can battle ideas. We can destroy every communist on Earth, but communism will still exist. That's the power of ideas. They don't die like that.
Yeah, and
can't shoot them in the head and make them go away.
They're trying to cut down on thought crimes. You have committed a crime by thinking a different way from what we want you to think.
That's puritanical religion right
that's
there.
That's a very, very scary system.
Yeah, in puritanical Christianity, to think of a sin is to sin.
Yeah.
And that's been carried on in very subtle ways with our own, you know, foreign policy and our own, you know, ethos as a society.
Sure.
I think it's terrifying. As a matter of fact, if I was living in any other country, I would be fearful for my very existence over the United States right now.
Many of the other countries are fearful because they don't know what's going to happen.
Well, they should be. The U.S. does not show any signs of stopping or holding back, ever. And I even talk to people around here, people that believe in the same sort of believe in, but at the same time hold true that everything the United States does is not only better than every other country out there, but righter than every other country out there.
I mean, it's, looking at it from my point of view, it's not, you know... It is the people as well in America, but it's fundamentally the people at the top, you know, the people that govern everything. If you could say the Illuminati, the Bush, the administration, everyone else that is in the superpower that's filtering down all this crap that each news station parrots the other news station, and it's the continuous rebroadcast of fear amongst the people that make them the way they are. So it's everybody's to blame in a way for the downfall of America.
Do we teach our children? It's the way that our educational systems are structured.
Yeah.
It's all of it into one. And, you know, it's the kind of system that no one person could devise and execute and have it work very well over an extended period of time. But as it's evolved through our constant conflict over the past, say, century, it has really come to be a quite efficient system of letting people believe one certain thing that you want them to believe, and also not giving them any inkling to go out there and see what other views are available and make a decision on themselves.
Yeah. Well, it's...
A prime example of this is how many people in the United States actually know how to dial internationally?
I don't know. Probably not very many.
Very, very few.
Yeah.
I have had to explain countless times what the plus means.
Wow.
Like, you put in the country code, and you hit the rest of the sequence. It's that easy. But
that's
no.
ridiculous.
But no.
It sounds like a cluster. It sounds like a clusterfuck of fear. I mean, you know, you in your colleges, in your high schools, you know, you're tormented if you're different, and you're bullied if you stand out and you think differently from the other, you know, cool kids, sort of thing. I might be wrong, you know, but that's what it looks like from here.
That's very true.
Yeah,
you become quiet.
Yeah.
You become very undistinguishable.
Yeah, you
from
become
the people around you.
You become the special kid, or you kind of socialize in different crowds, and people become fearful of you because you are different from them, and that's why shit happens. That's when.
And then you spend 16 hours a day on a computer and become one of us.
Exactly, and then you think, oh, okay.
But see, you know, it's easy to think along different lines and consider different opinions when you've been ostracized since, like, the beginning that you've been socialized.
Yeah.
Than it is for somebody who's actually, you know, in the system and doing well and doing what they have to do and, you know, being rewarded greatly for it. Mm. You know, it's very easy to take, like, you know, a person who's interested in science, socially awkward, and compare them against, like, somebody who's great in football.
Yeah.
American football here, you know, soccer or football there.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's quite the same. And the reward system, something becomes much different.
Oh, definitely, yes. I mean, it's very easy to take the blue pill because it's nice and quiet and you don't have to do much work.
Yeah. Well, you know, the guy, for instance, who invented Napster, he invented it as a 16-year-old, back before it was a pay service, back before all of that.
Yeah, when it was a peer-to-peer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he didn't play any sports, he didn't do any things like that.
Mm.
And I'm sure in the formative year or so that Napster came about, the reward system for him creating... something quite brilliant. I mean, really, that was the first commonly used peer-to-peer network. And it was developed by a teenager. But I'm sure the rewards for him doing that in the formative times were not so great as if he had been the star player.
Yeah, did he not have major fines, or did he go to prison or something, and then the company was reinvented as a legal... paid service.
I don't believe he actually did any jail time. Any Napster users for fines. What they did get is a government injunction to shut the entire site down. At which point, because Napster had been by that point begun integrating advertisement within the interface, he had been making money. And the government injunction shut him down, and within a year, he had revamped the entire system to be a paid-for service where he had the contacts within the record companies to be able to get them the money and worked out the deals.
Cool.
His lawyers did a great job with that, but no, he never went to jail for that.
Oh, okay. I don't know what happened, so I just wanted to ask.
He got fined heavily.
Yeah.
He shut down the service in accordance with the court juncture. And then he got together with investors and also some other techie-type people.
Cool.
And they formulated a way that they could put it back online, but instead of having to be file sharing, it would be cheaper than downloading the record.
Sure.
That's genius. I mean, that's a very bright 17-year-old there.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
I'll tell you. I think he's about 21 now, but probably about 23, actually. But that was something.
Yeah.
That was really something. I mean, it was something that affected everybody, really.
Sure. And you question yourself, why didn't I think of that first, eh?
Not really. That's not the kind of thing I would have ever thought of.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have thought of it now because, there's different services that do the same thing. But just be like, wait a minute. It's a decentralization, which is not my forte to begin with. And secondly, it kind of goes away from, common intuition.
Yeah.
Says you have something very big, very fast. Everything else connects to it. And through that way, much can be done over. It took a certain type of thought to say, wait a minute, this isn't. It's a circle.
Yeah.
For instance, if you go onto Linux and you open up Etherape, it's a graphical program that shows you internet connections. And then you log on to a peer-to-peer.
Yeah.
What you get is a spider web that goes around in a circle. Like the actual when connecting to that many IPs at the same time, becomes circular. And I actually think in that way it was quite an Eastern, as far as philosophically, way of thinking about computing that really revolutionized a lot of the ways that we do things.
Sure, yeah. And probably sped things up a little.
Oh, I'm sure it did.
Yeah, made it
I'm
more
sure it
secure.
Did.
Well, made it more, made it more flexible and at the same time secure, as in if one point went down, you could still get something from another point. And it wasn't,
it wasn't
dependent
it
on that central point.
Yes, it bypassed dependency on the central line, which I think was the biggest thing that it did. It's not the first to have done it, but it's the first thing that people have used to be able to do so.
Yeah.
And if you could somehow get a graphical display of the entire internet at the same time and then filter out everything except for the peer-to-peer users, what you'd see is different interconnecting, throughout the world.
Yeah.
Based on the speed of the connections. Brilliant.
Yeah, you would see a layered structure of groups of higher-end servers connecting to lower-end nodes, connecting to the clients that would suck from each end. And the connection would basically bounce up through those layers to get to where you need to go. And then once it's reached its target, it would then spread across to all the clients where they have that file. It's an amazing spiderweb of information.
It's amazing. It's a very efficient system, which is what makes you able to reach the download speeds that you are, despite the fact that any one user that you're connecting to has very minimal upload,
Yeah, it could be just a 56K client.
Sure, if they can upload at 3K, and you've got or even 1,000 of them at that point, you actually have a decent upload speed.
Yeah, it's a bit like the wonders of BitTorrent.
BitTorrent actually, if you look at the packets, the way that it sends packets is actually fairly inefficient.
Right.
As far as its use of bandwidth.
Yeah.
But very efficient as far as maximizing bandwidth to any one download.
Yeah, definitely. But also, when I think you could say the version one of that was Napster, was Kazaa, but then version two would be where every file on your machine was actually hashed that you wished to share. So you didn't have corrupted or injected viruses into files that you were downloading, because each file was verified from...
For the most part.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
way to defeat the, like the MD5 hashes, for instance, where you have to make your shell small enough. But there's an interesting in MD5 hash because it's a simple algorithm. For any input, it can give, you know, a certain number of correct answers.
Yeah.
The one that comes up on the screen as the hash is one of those.
Right.
You know, representing that file size. There's a way to those. But for the most part, for average security uses, that's very effective.
Hmm.
The other effective thing that you can do, and I'm sure I'm beating a dead horse with this, is don't do it from a Windows box.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you want a secure system, get away from Windows as far as you can.
Yeah, it's just a simple. I mean, aside from the fact that they release their software and it's holy as cheese.
Yeah.
The other thing about it is viruses and the Trojans and the you know, the backdoors and whatnot.
Yeah.
They've been programmed for Windows.
Mm.
Like, I can't tell you. You know, I've had a pop-up on Mozilla and Linux ask me if I want to install it download and run an EXE.
Yeah, well, you can't run an EXE on Linux. That's it.
Well, you can, but you have to try to.
Exactly. Yeah, you would have to go to some effort to do it.
The other nice thing is it does give you that alert.
Mm.
You know, whereas there are so many vulnerabilities with an Internet Explorer that you can actually use
to
download and execute code. I mean, there's JavaScript vulnerabilities up the yin and out the yang. I mean, really.
I saw it today at work. We had two attacks just because of a patch release that somebody exploited in the, I think it was the table exploit or something like that. It would actually run a buffer overflow and download some of its code, basically, that would fuck your computer up.
Yeah.
Now, if the person was running Firefox, that wouldn't have happened.
And was smart enough to click no. Actually, they don't have to be. Just make sure that all that you have running on your network don't have line, and you should be all right.
No, it wasn't a case of clicking no or yes. It was just you go on the website, it would just fuck it up. It would buff overflow your application.
Sure, use Firefox.
Crash.
I've actually found, in my opinion, and this is just my humble opinion, mind you, on Windows boxes where you want an alternative browser, I am much more apt to use Opera as a browser than I am Mozilla.
Sure.
On a Linux box, I wouldn't recommend installing the Opera because the Firefox on Linux is so much more superior.
Yeah.
But Opera does have a very, very good way of making downloads where it optimizes your bandwidth.
Yeah.
You know, when you have to download a file through HTML or HTTP, really. Mm.
I don't know if you're aware of this. Opera actually just had their 10-year anniversary.
That's
and
right.
They were giving away free licenses.
That's correct.
On the website.
Yeah.
The one thing
about that is the only thing that the license really does is it takes off the little banners where they give you access. And I found that it's none too obnoxious if when you install it, you just tell it to only give you Opera banners.
Yeah.
It'll load like 5 or 6 different ones depending, but you know, it's an Opera browser. It does Opera. That's not really all that.
Hmm. I did at one point run Opera, but I found it too buggy. And then I switched to Avant, which is basically running off the Internet Explorer engine. But it's tab browsed, and it also gives you a few other features. After that, I found that as insecure as Internet Explorer, and moved basically straight on to Firefox, and that's what I mean.
Yeah, well, as far as Internet Explorer goes, I mean, it's as simple as opening a JPEG now to have your entire computer exploited.
Sure.
Just off of the JPEG of death or whatever, you know,
really,
particular.
I've seen some really well-written GIF logic bombs that basically exploit the decompression methods and of the GIF format to create sort of redundant algorithms that once you click on it, it will bombard your computer with over like 3-4 gigs of data.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Shuts it down right quick. I mean, this is a very silly, silly thing to do. You're basically just have
Sure,
and it shuts down their computer. But they're very well scripted, and they work really well. I've never used a denial of service attack on anyone in my entire life. I was just saying that it's a vulnerability within the actual format. That's the word. Damn it.
But it is a amazing thing how these things work and end up causing so many problems when, at the end, you've got to see who is actually in, I don't know, who's got to take the blame for it. And I think it could be possibly the user than the person exploiting the code.
I've actually already said this once today, but I would say of all the computer problems that I've ever, faced for myself and other people, about time, give or take, fault.
Sorry, can you repeat that? Because it was a bit
choppy.
Oh,
I'm sorry. About 98% of the time, the blame for what's gone wrong lies on the user.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And, I mean, that's an issue of training and also an issue. I mean, I have yet to see any company that can produce idiot-proof software.
Hmm. That's
I mean, Linux is particularly not idiot-proof.
No. Yeah. Especially for an idiot like me.
Oh, come on.
For the average user who's just learning to use Linux sees a joke about RM-RF recursive, let's see what this does. No. Definitely not idiot-proof.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think, Belial, you probably give yourself too little credit.
Oh, thanks.
But we all tend to do that, I suppose.
Yeah, but I don't want to be, I don't want to be boasting, but I do find that what's happening now, especially with the radio show, it's just amazing that people say, oh, I've heard your show, and now I can see you in face-to-face sort of thing, and I felt like a bit of a, hacking celebrity in a way, even though it's only been going a few months. And
Well, what you're trying to do here is create a scene within the UK and a place with people within the UK that can do this.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, that's great. There was a new kid on the IRC, and he's like, oh, you're in the US, why are you on a UK radio show?
It's not allowed, go away.
And at first I was joking around with him. I was like, oh, I'm the token American. It's so the Secret Service doesn't swoop in.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I told him I thought that it was, A worthy goal.
Mm.
Definitely. B, it's really the first time I've ever reached out, beyond my own projects and what
sure.
I was doing to do something. And I did so because I thought it was, a good thing that was going on.
Yeah.
And also, I was like, I hope that, I do have something to contribute to the show.
You definitely do. It brings a whole kind of, a whole balance to the show, because we can say your point of view and our point of view.
I said it brings more of a world perspective to the whole thing. And I thought that was important
as
well.
Loads of people have asked me about what I do, and they said, what's your view on it? Is it mainly a UK thing? And I said, no, to start off with, it was to wake up or give a kick up the arse to the UK hacking community. And fundamentally, it's to bring everything together, because I can't say this medium is localized to one place. It's a global thing, so anyone is free to kind of contribute to it.
Mm-hmm.
This is, hence Ionix.
Yeah, well, hence me.
Yeah.
It actually threw me for a loop for a second. I'm like, wait. Well, the other thing that I said to him is I really do think that right now in the United States, as far as this sort of format goes and this sort of program, the market is flooded.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and there's places you can go and listen to a really quality show, but the market is definitely flooded, and yeah. I've never heard a real show that I probably stand a chance. I mean, like, if I wanted to be like, oh, yeah, I want to go on BenRev, you know, yeah. 3 times a week.
Yeah.
Well, first off, they don't do shows that often, and secondly, it just wouldn't happen. And I thought that that was a good thing.
Yeah.
To tell you the truth.
Yeah, that was one of my kind of things that I thought at the beginning when I was starting this. I thought, well, is it just going to be another radio show?
Mm.
What can I bring to it that will be unique? And that kind of got me thinking, and I thought, well...
Aside from the English accent.
Aside from the English accent, and aside from the fact that there aren't really any other shows of this flavor in the UK, apart from Lug Radio, but they mainly focus on one thing, and that's Linux and open source.
Oh, yeah. That was the other thing that I said, is, like, I don't know of any other shows, you know, within the UK.
Yeah.
I think it's important to have it.
Sure, but we also, apart from that, we also broadcast, you know, Monday to Friday, and including some days in the weekends as well. So it's a regular thing, and I think that commitment and that regularity.
Well, the show is much more content-laden than others.
Yeah.
But you know what? They're all entertaining.
Sure, they definitely are. Yeah, even the really weird. Odd ones that.
See, the weird ones are what define us.
Exactly. So let's see how long we've been on.
All right. I'm going to turn you over to Neo Interest right now.
Cool, okay.
Perhaps talk a little Xbox. My cordless phone is beeping at me.
Okay.
It's going to be dying soon. I'll be reconnecting shortly.
Cool.
But, yeah, ask him about some of the software mods. Ask him about cable telephony or cable internet in the United States. Anything along those lines, I'll be right back.
Excellent, okay.
All right.
Okay, how are we doing?
So, yeah, I mean, you said you are a technician, or...
Yes, I am.
Cool. A friend of mine did a little bit of work with BT as a telephone repair technician and all that kind of stuff. This is one of my interests is I'd love to go out there in the field and do some of this stuff legally, legitimately. But how is everything structured there? I know it's very this company, that company, and it's very localized to where you are and which state.
Yeah, it's pretty much still an insecure telephone system around here. I mean, as far as everybody has the dial tone provided right outside the house, easy access with just a simple can wrench, you can access anybody's phone wiring.
Yeah.
I mean, it's never really been a secure network. The digital phone service that we do actually helps a little bit to some extent because you're providing your dial tone inside your own house.
Yeah.
Whereas you don't have access to just walk up to the side of somebody's house and, you know, tap on your little phone or whatever you got and just plug in. That kind of helped the system a little bit, I think.
Cool.
As far as, it's more of a fad now. A lot of people are switching over to the service just because it's new and different.
Yeah.
They keep us very busy, that's for sure.
Cool. How about an optic line straight into your house? Do a lot of people have that, or?
Actually, in the area I'm in, they're just rolling out fiber.
Yeah.
It's actually all provided through Verizon at this point.
Yeah, that's right.
So they've run most of the outside lines. They haven't really started doing drops to people's houses yet, just because of the fact that they don't have enough technicians.
Mm.
The telephone service is always, they definitely don't have as many technicians as the cable company does. They have a lot less work, and they charge a lot more for a service person to come to your house.
Yeah. I would like to see the ability for me to have a direct line to my house. Now, we've just lost Neo right there. Hello. Hello? Ah, dear. So yeah, I knew this was going to happen. It's bound to happen once in a while in every show. And it was going too well. Just too well. Let's hopefully he's going to call back. In the meantime, I'll be playing you some smooth music to get you through this. Hello.
Hello, this is Ionix again.
Yes, I know it is. Because you just dropped your friend near there.
Yeah, he just told me.
Okay.
Yeah. You call him back, and he'll hop back on. Apparently, I have the auto-ownage setting set on to my router, so anytime I make a call to you, it just pipes it as the most important thing ever, and everything else drops.
It owns my network connection completely.
Every time I call it, it's just like, all you have is me.
Yeah.
That's it. No internet, no any other phone, nothing else. Just me.
Yeah.
Just me. I mean, I'm flattered, really, that Link likes me that much, but it is kind of annoying when going on the show doing this kind of format. And I'm sure that it cut him off in the middle of something really good, too.
Yeah, it was kind of important. He was just telling us all the root passwords for the FBI servers. And then he just cut us off right there.
You guys don't have them?
Yeah.
When we log into AOL over here, they just give them to us.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's more secure than...
You guys are behind the times. No, go ahead and give him a call back.
I will do. you gotta love the internet, eh?
Hello.
Let me just bridge these two calls together.
Mm-hmm.
And we're back.
Excellent.
Very good.
Cool.
So, yeah, we were talking about fiber and stuff.
That's right.
Like I was saying, they haven't started really doing much in-home installation of the fiber, just due to lack of technicians. But they, very shortly, they will be offering a very competitive internet service, which will be approximately the same cost around here. It averages about $50 a month from what I'm told.
Yeah.
They're going to have a 15 megabit downstream.
Wow.
For $49 a month. And they're also offering a premium service. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be 30 megabits downstream for $125 a month.
Wow, okay.
What's the upstream on those?
Pretty good. I haven't heard, to be honest with you. I just heard this from a Verizon technician.
Oh, okay.
That happened to be at one of my jobs that I was doing.
But it would be pretty cool if that was here in the UK, because so far you can get about 8 megabit on your ADSL line, and if you were ever considering getting an optical line straight to your house, it would be an enormous, enormous expense.
Yeah. Well, apparently they're going to be offering a competitive digital telephone service along with cable television service over these lines, too, from what I understand, which should definitely be interesting.
Yeah, I did.
Do you know what?
Sorry, today I did actually see a full setup of one of these lines where they spliced the cable, they spliced the optical cable, and then they brought it down to the house. They installed that the box with the power supplies and the redundant battery and all that kind of stuff. It was pretty cool to see that.
Yeah, our digital telephone service we have here actually supplies with a redundant battery for the phone service.
Yeah.
As far as your internet connection and stuff, you're kind of SOL if you lose power.
Mm.
Yeah, that is a problem. Another problem right now is, for instance, I'm talking to you live via Syracuse, New York, and my voice over IP phone is emergency 911 enabled.
Right.
So if I were to call 911 on my phone right now, scream into the phone and say, oh, my God, help me, and then hang up, it would show up at my apartment down in Florida because that's where I've registered the address.
Yeah.
And granted, that would be a very funny prank to play on my roommate.
Yeah.
Also.
An illegal prank.
Well, yeah. But there's no way around that sort of thing unless they put GPS chips in the actual routers.
Oh, that would be scary.
Yeah, we've got them in every cell phone now. Mm. I mean, now it's time to work with the computers, right?
Mm. let's just take away more rights.
Sure, sure. More privacy. Down the tubes. Go ahead. Flush it. Flush it. Yeah. In the name of national security, destroy the citizenry.
Yeah. In the name of national security, everybody will have to walk around naked.
Well, all right. That's
we'll start installing chips in the people.
Yes. An anal probe.
Did you get a chance to air the airport security thing that I was talking about before on the voicemail?
Was that the last one you sent us?
The one from yesterday. Actually, no, it was around 4:30 here, so it must have been like 9:30 there.
The thing is, I picked it up on my work computer.
Oh, okay.
Which
okay.
means all since I came back from work to home, I've been trying to import that file back into Skype to play it. I haven't had any luck at all, so I'm going to try and find a way to be able to play that DAT file back as just voice.
If you didn't delete the message, then go into Skype and check your voicemail from there on your Linux box and use Audacity to just record the WAV file.
Okay, cool.
And then you can play it as a WAV file. I wouldn't really worry about patching it in as a telephone interface. That seems to be bringing too much into it.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that I picked it up on a Windows box, but I found the actual file. It's just a DAT file, and I emailed it to myself, so I've got a copy of it. And I'm just trying I just love if it would play somehow. I'm trying to get it to play.
Actually, Windows Media Player does a good job of playing DAT files.
Yeah, I might give that a go then.
Many of the times, like when I've used MPEGs.
Yeah.
That have been written to a VCD, and I wanted the video file, I've simply taken the .dat file out of the MPEG folder, downloaded it to my hard drive, and when I click on it with Windows Media Player, it plays fine. Oh, I haven't found another player that can actually do that, so that might be an option.
I might just give that a go now and see if it falls over or if it does it. The problem with Windows Media Player is that it's so CPU intensive, it will suck the living daylights out of your CPU.
Yeah, it really will. It really will. It's hard to run many things on it, especially if you're like me and I'm running on 5-year-old technology.
Yeah. Okay, let's give that a go now.
Oh,
let's see if this baby will play. No. Cannot play this file type. It's not supported.
All right, so what you're going to have to do is going to have to access it on your computer and record the WAV file then. That's a shame.
Yeah, never mind. I'll just have to find a way to do it.
All right, well, I won't make it redundant then. I'll just wait till it gets worked out then.
Yeah.
But I do have to say, my trip to the to New York from Florida was quite interesting. And we'll have to wait on that.
Cool. I mean, you could just record it again. But I'll have to close Skype each time at work and not ever open it up, because what happens is wherever you open it from that location, it will pick up the voicemail and then save it on there. But I thought you could export it and then import it straight back into Skype, because it does actually save it in a folder where it says voicemail.
Okay, I can do it right now. I just found my notes.
Okay.
I'll breeze through it.
Cool.
Welcome to the Hacker Voice News Radio News Flash. This is Ionix's trip from Sarasota, Florida to Syracuse, New York. In Sarasota, Florida, RFID badges are issued to every authorized personnel to access restricted areas. The 4-digit key code must be punched into the terminal, at which point the RFID badge is waved in front of it. The tower for Sarasota, Florida's airport is located on 111.30 megahertz. As we are flying from Sarasota to Tampa, we were flying on a 2-prop 10-seat, so that's 8 passengers, a pilot and co-pilot. I was sitting directly behind the co-pilot seat, which, coincidentally, was empty. It was a Continental pilot, but the plane was obviously not. The front of it was painted like a shark. It faded into some pink thing with a montage on the background. It was lovely. We took off, and the turbulence bounced us everywhere. It was like riding a roller coaster for 20 minutes. It was great. There were times when we lost 30 feet in the matter of less than 2 seconds, which gives you that uniquely guttural feeling. The plane was being bounced around. It was great. Ooh.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. The landing in particular was kind of scary because we were coming in kind of sideways for most of it, and we bounced a couple times on the runway. Yeah. I still have to say, as far as booking with a major airline, that was the most entertaining and excellent flight I have ever had on any airline, let alone Continental. And I'm looking forward to it because I'm going to see it again when I go back.
Cool.
There were 4 passengers on the plane. There was no co-pilot. I got to read all of the instrumentation and watch what the pilot was doing while he did it.
That's fantastic.
And as he was taxiing down the runway, he actually did stick his head out the window to check what's behind it.
Classic.
It was that kind of flight. I would never have expected, like, on a major airline that I would have had such a great flight. There were a couple of people on the flight who were afraid of flying. Mm. This is not the flight to take if you're afraid of flying.
Take a Boeing 747 or a 777 or something like that, if you're
something
ever thinking...
very large with a lot of stability control.
Yeah.
And also, if you get motion sick in a car, you also do not want to get in a plane that is of this size. It was a little more stable than some of the Cessnas that I've ridden in, but this was a plane to be reckoned with. Incidentally, there is no Wi-Fi in the Sarasota airport, and I did not have time to check out any payphones.
Okay.
Moving on to Tampa. Tampa is Wi-Fi enabled, but only on port 80. I don't have a laptop, so I couldn't reconfigure my router so that the voiceover IP used that. And even if I had, I'm not sure that it would have worked. The whole Wi-Fi through the airport thing worked beautifully as far as connecting, but I never managed to actually make a voiceover IP call with my router. Unfortunate. The Tampa to Cleveland flight was uneventful on a large plane, although they had a lovely thing that I like to call, and so does the corporation, Verizon Airphone. They have telephones in the behind the headrests of the seat. At any two or three, because there's 2 seats on one side of the plane, 3 seats on the other, there's 1 per seat row.
Right.
Now, there's some interesting things that you can do from these things. The Verizon Airphones, you pick them up and ask how you want to pay, and I responded I didn't, although that wasn't a valid option. From a Verizon Airphone, you can dial *654, and if you have a Verizon wireless account, what it will do is bill you $10 for the month for the service, and then give you 10 cents per minute on whatever call you make from that Airphone. Now, this sounds like a cellular rip, but it's actually about 80% cheaper than actually using the Verizon Airphone with a credit card.
Right.
At any given time, you can pick up the phone and hit *227, they will give you real-time stock quotes. At any given time, given that you have an AOL account, you can hit *AOL on the phone and use their interface to log into your AOL account and actually listen to your emails on an airplane, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah.
As a sort of side note, if you're interested in calling Verizon Airphones, these are not guaranteed to work at any given point in time. If you do call them, you have to find one that somebody has already paid for and accepted incoming calls on, which is fairly rare because the charges are so great.
Yeah.
But in the United States, there's a toll-free number, 1-877-888-99XX. The last X is being... determining on which airphone you want to call.
Right. Okay.
This is the only one I know. But they ring true. And if you do find somebody, then you can talk to somebody who's on an airplane and ring them and be like, "So, where are you going?" Yes. If you do get them to answer. Yeah. So that was tremendous fun. The flight
on the way from Cleveland to Syracuse, I sat next to somebody who was actually a Louisiana refugee.
Right.
She was flying to Syracuse to stay with her sister, and she was going to university in there, right in New Orleans. I think it was Louisiana State.
Cool.
And said that all of the buildings on the campus, except for one, had been thoroughly destroyed.
Wow.
She wasn't sure when or if she would ever be able to take classes there again.
Yeah.
And she considered herself tremendously lucky to be able to get out of the city.
Yeah.
Landed in Syracuse. Weather is great. After dealing with a heat index of over 110 for so long, I've decided that very little humidity and 78-degree temperature with clear skies is a good way to go. And that's about the extent of my trip notes.
Sounds good. But I have to say, you could play a funny prank with that call in to the Skyphone. If you you did manage to get somebody to pick up, could you not say, this is the pilot? I just want to say to you, because I know I trust you, I something's happened in the cockpit. Don't tell anyone else, but we're all about to die in 5 minutes. So I just thought I'd let
that's
you know.
Well, that's just awful. That's not a funny prank.
That is a funny prank.
All right. It's a funny prank, but it's preying on people's insecurities.
But is that not...
You're going to have one... Okay.
Yeah.
What might have been more funny was being like, this is a U.S. Marshal. There's nothing to be afraid about. Carry on about your normal business. There's a known felon on the plane. It has been determined that he's not likely to try and hijack it.
Yeah.
But when you land, he will be tackled on site.
Yeah.
Please, stay in your seat. And then... have them looking around the cabin for the entire flight, looking for who's the guy.
Yeah, he's not likely to blow himself up, but it is a possibility. So please remain as far as away you can.
As a bit of social engineering, you could always call this person, say that you were from Verizon, and ask them to put a key code into the phone. I think it's *1. Something. It's a 3-digit number, but it's for call forwarding.
Right.
And then have them call forward all of the calls to that number to something somewhere else.
Cool.
Granted, you rack up an enormous bill on their credit card.
Mm.
But it could be funny to see, you know, how they react. I don't know.
I think that would be the ultimate prank. Pranking someone live while they're in mid-flight. That would be pretty cool.
That is pretty good.
I think
that
we've just. I think we've just lost Neo.
Sorry. Yeah, he's indicating that you did in fact lose him.
Okay.
You can hang up. It's all right.
Cool. Okay.
He definitely clicked out there. Not sure why.
Oh well.
I discovered a major security flaw.
Okay.
In airport security here. The main flaw was that I flew out of an airport that was basically the size of my living room.
Yeah.
And security measures in that airport were very lax. I mean, they complied to standards, but let's just say that there weren't people, like, standing around in military-type uniforms.
Yeah.
And there was very little actual security. In my baggage that I checked, that was stowed in the planes.
Hmm.
I put my pocket knife in there. It's a folding blade, legal in the United States, although definitely not legal to carry onto an airplane.
No.
And as I read through the brochure before I took my flight, apparently that's illegal. And airport security is supposed to confiscate them.
Right.
As they send, you know, your baggage through an X-ray machine.
Yeah.
And they state implicitly that anything that they find that is contraband, you know, they're not liable for, and you're not liable for, but you're not getting it back.
Mm.
And when I arrived, I was curious about this because I didn't know that you weren't allowed to stow it as luggage. Mm. I knew you weren't allowed to bring one onto the plane. That's fairly obvious.
Yeah.
You weren't allowed to stow it as luggage. And when I got back here, it was here. The other part of this is that I flew out of a very low security airport, but when I landed at any of the high security airports that I got to, immediately went off of the plane and was in the secure area. It was past the security checkpoint. And if I left that area, I would have to come back in through their airport security, but so long as I stayed in the terminal, I was considered secure.
Okay.
Which raises questions as to whether you could take a very, very small, very, very lax airport
and get through that into there.
Yeah, exactly. And once you're there, you can land in JFK, but you're in the secure area of JFK.
Yeah.
That's where the real flaw lies, is that there are very, very heightened security measures in major airports and things like that.
Mm.
But you're allowed to fly into these airports, and so long as you're considered a secure passenger, as in you've done nothing terribly suspicious, I can't even imagine what you could do except for screaming, "I've got a bomb." When you land, there's no attention paid to you whatsoever. You're considered secure. Which it's kind of like all of the exploits and tricks on the internet where they use cross-referring.
Yeah.
Like cross-site referring. Like, well, the site says that you're secure, therefore our computer system is going to say you're secure.
Sure.
And it's we've all scary. Seen problems. Oh, it is scary.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, I don't fit any kind of profile very well. You know, for this sort of thing. But even so, I mean, I was very surprised to land in Syracuse and still have my folding knife with me.
Yeah. You could hijack, theoretically, a plane with that.
Yeah, what I would have had to have done is after I got off of my flight, I would have had to have come up with some story about an emergency where I needed to get to my bag.
Yeah. And I think we have lost him. Because I've run out of Skype out. Damn. Okay, what we're going to do now is I'm going to close off the show. And on behalf of Ionix and you and myself, I'd like to thank you for listening. And hope to join us tomorrow for the same time, same day. I mean, same time, next time. Yeah.